Hi everyone, welcome to the Equip and Elevate podcast. This is a place where we want to help women to cultivate the courage to own their purpose, own their journeys, and own their success. I'm your host, Ayanda Vanna, and each episode, I'll be bringing you conversations with some dynamic and bold women. My goal is that through inspired conversations, you'll gain a new perspective and tools to thrive in your personal journeys, businesses, and careers. And most importantly, to live a life of purpose and passion. Thank you so much for pushing play today. And now let's begin. This episode is proudly sponsored by OctaFX, your trusted global forex trading platform. With over a decade of experience, OctaFX has empowered over 40 million traders across 180 countries. Stay tuned and discover how you boost your income with OctaFX. Welcome to another episode of Equip and Elevate, guys. We are live at Aura and Tumble at Radisson. It's really beautiful, guys, and I think you'll get an opportunity to see the amazing place. We'll share all the snippets throughout the episode as well as on my Instagram. And for anyone that's joining us today, I'm really excited about this conversation. I've been trying to get this lady on the podcast for some time, but I'm glad that she's here. We are really grateful. She's sick. You will hear even not her voice is sick. we're really honored to have Candace. So we have Candace. She is a storyteller, a voice artist, host, producer of the 5-Minute Call show. And so really excited to have this conversation. And I think for me, even though I don't know her personally, but I'm most excited to tap into the faith side of our journey, because that's how I met her, through church. So it's really excited to have that conversation. So welcome to our podcast.
You are so refreshing.
Oh,
so
thank you.
Thank you for having
thank
me.
Thank you so much. I think more than anything, I think anyone here, we've just had you for like 10 minutes and everyone's loving your energy.
Are you always like this?
Are you
loving my energy?
Are you always like this?
I think maybe it's a gifting that God has imparted.
Yeah.
That I just have a natural love for people.
Sure.
And I'm more often than not receptive to different kinds of people.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to know what you do for a living to accept you. I don't need to know your tax bracket or I can benefit from knowing you.
Yeah.
Even in primary school, I got an award. It was called the Fellowship Award.
Oh, wow.
And this is the most consistent, nice person
throughout
their primary school career. So if I've never won any meaningful awards, or you don't know that I did, at least you know I won the Fellowship Award.
Yes. I love that. And I think it's actually so evident, because like, even when I met you for the first time, I mean, I was like, I also don't like bothering people. And I think you just made me feel like you've known me and welcome in that space. And I knew that no matter what, we have to have in this podcast. And I think some people have met you here and they've had some experiences with you. So, yeah, I'm really excited. But to get started, we're going to start with an icebreaker. Something different we do on this on our podcast. We've never done it before. It's always like, let's get into your childhood. How was it? You know, but before that, and I want to just do quick icebreakers. So I'm going to ask you the first question. Let me find a cool icebreaker. I feel like I've used a lot of them today. Okay. What's one habit or practice you've adopted that has positively influenced your thinking?
Positively?
Yeah.
Oh, it is reading the word first thing in the morning.
Mm.
So I have a Bible app. It's the YouVersion Bible app.
Yeah.
And there is the scripture of the day or the word of the day. And before I even read an email, open my WhatsApp, my iMessage, click on Instagram, the first thing I do is read the word. And it automatically sets the tone for my day in a way where I've allowed the Holy Spirit to order my steps completely. Because sometimes, like, you'll read something on Twitter and it disturbs your energy, or you could get a text that frustrates you, or you open up your emails and you're already in work mode, but you haven't really ushered yourself into the day correctly, or ushered the Holy Spirit into the day.
Yeah.
Or coming into the awareness of His presence.
Yeah.
So the minute I start the day with the word, and then naturally prayer proceeds, it's like, okay, whatever happens, whatever the outcomes, or whatever possible inconveniences, disappointment, bad news, whatever I could encounter, at least I know that I've got the firm foundation to carry whatever it is,
sure,
or to handle whatever it is that comes my way.
I love that.
That's not always the case. Sometimes I open and I see I've got three messages from someone. I was like, okay, is this urgent? What's going on?
Yeah. I love that, because I think sometimes even just maybe waking up and opening your phone and you go on social media, it can disturb your day.
I know. Oh, no, it will.
Yeah.
It will. Also, because if you think about it, especially with the nature of comparison, like you start your day and you see this person bought a new car, and then that's what the enemy seeks to do, to already place that sense of, oh, this person's doing so well. And then there's those little invasive thoughts that go, I should be doing better. I should be working harder. Oh, no, I should be on the grind. Let's get this bread.
Mm.
And then we get into that mode. And it's like, okay, when did you consult the Holy Spirit about your day?
Yo, sure.
You
That's
see?
That's true. Yeah, so yeah. Good. I love that. So the next one is, if you could have dinner with one historical figure, who would it be and why?
I'd have dinner with Jesus. probably not. Jesus, I love you. But I don't know if I'd have dinner with you. Historical figure.
Yeah.
Ooh. And I think to a fault, or I haven't done the necessary research, but there is an Ethiopian queen that is even, there's a biblical reference of her in Acts, I think Acts 8, somewhere in there. It's Queen Candace of the Cushites. So they, like, even when people think Candace is not an African name, there literally was a queen. And the queens of the time were called Candaces.
Sure.
Or they were referred to as, it's Candaces or Candakes. I haven't really wrapped my mind around the context. But definitely a queen after whom I am named. I know when my parents named me, I don't know if they had her in mind.
Yeah.
But I know that she's a great reference point. And I'd love to really understand what the Cushites and African queens that aren't often at the center of royalty or even history.
Yeah.
Like, they're very often, like, not considered. Even political figures, it's very easy for them to be seen as the wife of or the woman who did this, but not necessarily for the impact that they had. So probably one of the Cushites or the queens of the time in a biblical era.
And I think would love to hear those stories. And I think now there needs to be a more, I mean, Netflix has started with the different queens in Africa, but, like, for instance, the first time I hear of the, you know, Queen Candace, and I'm someone who is very, like, I love history. Like, I sit there and I watch documentaries, and I think we need more of that. Maybe you could be the storyteller.
Clearly.
You
clearly
could do something about this. So the next and last question or icebreaker is, after a long day, how do you unwind?
Sleep. If I could get a good dose of sleep, I am content. Also, it is that thing of not always, like, I fill up my life and my time with meaningful things, that sometimes it's good to watch, as they call, trash TV.
Oh, I love trash
TV. So sometimes you just need to watch that reality TV show that chews at your brain cells, but at least you get a good laugh and it tugs at your moral compass.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's so unserious.
Yeah.
Like, let me just see, like, what's happening in this relationship with these people and then go about my day.
No, absolutely. My husband's always like, he'll see me watch trash TV and he'll be like, yo, I'm coin. I can't. You watch me like this. It's like, yo, I can't. I'm like, you're internalizing it too much.
That's and it's just noise and drama and just chaos.
Yeah.
But I love it.
Me too. It's
guilty pleasure.
It's one of my guilty pleasures, actually. It's just, oof. And I think something about South Africa now, we've just gotten more.
Oh, more, my gosh. More. There's an entire channel dedicated to that kind of content.
Yeah, that's true. That will shall remain unmentioned. So now we're going to move into your childhood and some of the key values or things that have influenced your journey. So can you tell us about your upbringing and some of the key values that have shaped who you are today?
I was blessed to be raised by an amazing woman. Tragically, we lost my father in 1997, and as a result, my mom had to raise her three daughters on her own, partnered with God, thank you, and thankfully so, that, you know, even in the midst of, like, tragedy and sadness, that she was able to really commit to being a mom. She even does it today. Like, I go back home and I visit her, and she wants to iron my clothes. I'm like, Mom, they're on my body. This pair of jeans does not need ironing. It's a pair of skinny, like, you know. She moms incessantly in the best way. And I have two older sisters, both of which are in the entertainment industry, Buntle and Rifilwe. Buntle Moloi now, and then Rifilwe Murisele. And we had a really colorful upbringing. I'm so grateful that I also have a mom who gave us permission to express ourselves as boldly as we wanted to. I mean, we are all artists by nature and by design. And from a young age, she already had given us the freedom to do that. So so drama, like my interest and my keen love for drama stemmed from the home environment because, you know, you don't see it as reading scripts, but now you're just grabbing the magazine and you're seeing these little pieces of text and now you want to read it out and dramatize it and characterize it and do all of these fun things. And my family were a very receptive audience. They were always willing to hear what ridiculousness I had. And the foundation that we had was founded on faith. So we're a praying family. And a family that really understood that we were each other's network first. So we're very easily want to look to the world for validation or look to the world for a sense of support. My mom instilled in us from a young age, hey, these girls, yeah, your sisters are your friends first. So before you go out and say, hi, friend, does my outfit look good? You come here, you say, hey, sis, I need counsel in this. I need advice in this department. Please help me through this. Please guide me in this environment. Or, I mean, and especially to all the sisters, they've experienced more life than I have. But maybe without full context, but there's certain things like dating that they would be more familiar with. Or career pursuits or school. So we really had that safety net of family, of unity, of love. Not a lot of fighting. Interestingly enough, like people ask a lot. Like they're like, oh, were there any like, yeah, there's those moments where there's like disagreements. Yeah. And as your character starts to develop, there will be those parts where we're stepping on toes. But the house was full of love. The environment was just potent with love, respect. Respect probably is the number one value. Number one value that whoever comes into this house, you respect, you honor them, you honor their presence. Even the act of generosity and sharing, it came from home. My mom, the same way that she experienced it through her mom, I experienced the same thing where if you walk in and there's three plates of food, one of you must sacrifice. There's a guest here. And you must cater to the guest. You must be hospitable to the guest. The guest decides they want to watch a WWE SmackDown. They must watch it. Whatever it is, you know, to really honor the presence of the people in your environment.
Yeah.
And to have them feel like home is where we are. That they can trust, that they can be vulnerable. It was a kind of home where, funny enough, and you'd think with a staunchly Christian mom that I had, like if I had a friend, or this is a real life story. One of my sisters, I won't say who, had a friend who had the deepest hangover, and he was going through an existential crisis. He, from that moment, I think he got the revelation that his life was falling apart.
Sure.
And he called and he was like, "Can I come over?" And my mom just took care of him. She was like, "What's going on?" Straight from a party, homie is lit. But she was like, "This is home. I accept you in whatever brokenness, in whatever imperfections. Yes, you will respect my home, but I also acknowledge that we are all learning in this thing called life." And she became a mother to everyone.
I love her.
I was a bit jealous sometimes, but yes, I still share her.
Yeah,
it's an honor to do so.
Sure. And how was Candace at 7? Have you always been this bubbly?
Yes, always. I think worse, because I didn't really have a sense of a filter at the time. You know, like kids really just say anything. Like they could tell you that you look terrible in that outfit. I mean, look, I wasn't that kid. I wasn't that kind of kid. I wasn't disrespectful. But I was a very inquisitive child. I wanted to know more. I also had this very interesting habit. During breaks, I wouldn't go out and play. Like sometimes I would, but I wanted to sit inside and read the dictionary.
Sure.
So I wanted to read it. I wanted to know words. I loved words. There was something about words. And I was this 8-year-old child saying things like, I abhor you. It's like, I abhor, Susie, you're saying I dislike it. Not even, I abhor that food. And that was one of my favorite words.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think my favorite word in grade 3 was basically. I said basically after everything. I was like, well, basically, basically. And it's like, ma'am, okay. But that was the kind of kid that I was. And God was actively sowing these seeds in me that are the fruits that I'm bearing today. Seeds of entertainment. I recall quite vividly, in fact. It was in grade 7. My gosh, this memory just came back to me. I used to do impersonations for the older kids. So they would literally come to the class and I would stand there on that little... what do they call it?
Yeah, I see that.
Kiss Tupinyana. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I would stand there and I would sing Britney Spears. And I would like sing for all the older kids. And I'd sing Hit Me Baby One More Time. And I was like, if I could just do this for the rest of my days, I'm content. Did I have the vocal range for it? Probably not. But I just loved immersing myself in just the act of performance and more so the response that it yielded from people that, like, people would literally, like, the kids, like, the grade 7, the grade 6s and 7s would come. They'd be like, where's Candace? And I'd be like, yeah. And then I'd come out and then I'd sing Hit Me Baby One More Time and then I'd go back. And that was me. Most ridiculous, but it was a beautiful time.
Do you think that at that stage when you were performing, was that the moment where you were like, this is what I want to do for life, even though you maybe didn't have the word for what you were doing?
Maybe in the later years.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that I really loved it, I was very much an academic. So, and that maybe also came from the influence from home and the environments that I was in, that academics. And for that reason, I never associated the arts with academic success because we never saw it modeled often enough. And I was very drawn to anything that looked and sounded like black success. So that kind of, you kind of want to be a doctor, you want to be that, you want to be that. I knew quite secretly that I wanted to be a trapeze artist. I was like, I want to work in the circus. I'm going to be on a tightrope in a leotard and they're going to flip me like a pretzel and I'll be happy. So that's what I knew. I don't know what kind of shows I was watching. I probably was watching the Moscow Circus or Cirque du Soleil on SABC 3. And I saw it happening and I was like, oh my word, that looks fun. And yeah, I had that as a reference point, but I had a desire for it, but not a strong passion for wanting to do it professionally until it won.
And how did you get to that stage? What was your career progression? How did you get into what you're doing right now?
Ooh.
And what was the journey for anyone that's sitting there saying, you know, this is what I'm really love following your journey and I want to see and learn from some of your ways, how you got into the industry?
I did some dabbling because what I was confident about, I wanted to do, I'm going to be a trapeze artist and then a teacher, then an interior designer, then a psychologist. So there were so many interests that I was tapping into. And I don't take away the fact that I had a privilege of a mom that trusted me with that choice. Because some people don't have that.
Yeah.
Like, you tell your parents you want to be in the arts and they'll be like, that's a hobby.
It's not even an option.
That's something you do in your spare time. It's all actor. We don't do that in this family. You're going to go be A, B, C, D as per such and such examples. And then when you're done and you've established a sound and stable career, then you can tell us about acting. But it's crazy because the first degree that I applied for was a B.Ed, a Bachelor of Education. Because despite me being extremely diligent, all of my distinctions, I was like, I'm going to teach English.
Sure.
And I'm not taking away
from being intelligent. But it makes sense. You were spending time reading the dictionary. Like, you always, like...
It always made sense. Yeah. It always made sense. And, I was like, okay, I'll do a Bachelor of Ed. Or I wanted to teach life orientation. Because I was starting to see, and it's quite peculiar that even though, like, I was 18, I recognized the flaws that existed within the curriculum And it was frustrating for me in a way where I was like, I want to eradicate or I want to right the wrongs of our curriculum. How are we not learning about tax? How are we not learning about an entrepreneurship, fundamental soft skills that will carry us into our adult life? And I was like, well, if I can't actively be part of it right now as a student, perhaps I can empower myself and be the teacher and maybe the governing body or whatever it is or whatever role I get to play in starting to see a fundamental change in that. So I thought of that as a career path. And then God won. I watched Waza Albert at the Market Theatre. And it was an incredible, incredible theatre production. And the leads at the time were the late Bamncedisi Shabangu and Bab Hamilton Dlamini, who is still with us, still thriving, and we love him. And I watched them on stage, and I wept. Like, after their performance, I absolutely wept. And it was, like, such an out-of-body experience, but it was something supernatural where, having watched them and partaking in that experience as an audience member, that's when I was like, I have to do that. That I'm not missing a moment. To gift people with this kind of experience, that level of escapism where you don't have to. And I mean, I was in grade 11 or 12, I think, and I watched them and I was like, this is it. This is absolutely it. And I wasn't worried about my marks. I wasn't worried about studying the work. I just knew I experienced something that changed my life forever. And yes, granted, I applied for a B.Ed, and my second was a drama degree, and then it was a general B.A. That was the moment that solidified for me that the second decision was, in fact, the best decision. And then I went about and I studied drama, and it studied me back, child. Listen. But, I mean, I'm here now by the grace of God.
Yeah.
I try to drop out. Yo, University of Witwatersrand. Oh, you know they say Wits gives you the edge.
Yeah.
Wits gives you the edge. It has you dangling from the edge. It's just, but we're here now.
Love. And
I don't know if I answered your question on how I even got here, but.
Yeah.
As we delve into the world of diversifying income streams and achieving financial independence, OctaFX stands as a powerful financial instrument. The OctaFX trading app is the ultimate solution for trading, offering transparent trading conditions, swift and secure deposits and withdrawals, daily trading insights, round-the-clock customer support. OctaFX boosts a wide range of instruments, including stock assets, cryptocurrencies, currency pairs, metals, and indexes. What sets OctaFX apart is unwavering commitment to security, employing advanced technology to safeguard your personal and financial information. If you're new to trading, you do not need to worry. OctaFX offers a wealth of free resources for aspiring traders. For more information on how you can start making extra money, simply click the link in the episode description.
No, I think I love how you know, that defining moment that said, this is what I want to do for life, or this is what I want to do for the next couple of years, so when time changes. And with all of that, would you say that you're operating from a place of purpose? I think maybe before we even get there, how do you define purpose for yourself?
Girl, we did this at church today. Purpose is service. Purpose is service. It's rooted in service. And, you know, we love to do this thing where we venture on this journey of finding ourselves. I need to discover who I am. You know who you are. If you read the word, you'll find who you are. If you read who God designed you to be, you're set apart, you're unique, you're called to serve others, you're called to make disciples. If you understand the fundamentals of that, and you root yourself in that identity as per God's design for you, then everything else will gradually, like, start to inform you, and will give you better context and insight on how you can serve in whatever lane that you're in. Right now, I'm certainly serving within my purpose, and I'm serving within, or rather, I'm living in my purpose. I know it's continuously growing, and it's expanding, and I'm exploring, and I'm learning. But yeah, I'm certainly, and granted, I've kind of moved away from the entertainment industry, which makes it a little more interesting. Like, I'm not acting as consistently because, you know, a girl audition, or I've been auditioning, and it just, things have not been working out.
Mm.
As an actress, it's not. And people go, Candace, we haven't seen you on TV. I'm like, yeah, I know.
Mm.
I'm aware of that. But God needed me to be in a very different place, operating on a different frequency, in a different capacity.
Sure.
And that for me is purpose.
Mm. I love that. I love, love, love. Have you always known your purpose?
No. Maybe I may have not known it with clarity. Mm. I don't think I knew it with certainty of what it is, because we sometimes don't know how to name something.
Mm.
I knew that I wanted to teach. I knew that I wanted to give joy, to impart joy. I didn't know that I wanted to serve within the context of the ministry.
Mm.
But I've gotten that revelation now. So I haven't always known. I knew bits and pieces, but in its fullness, being mature enough and having the wisdom to identify what that is in the year of being 29, going on 30, you know, then I'm like, okay, cool. Now I'm starting to see how all of these seeds over the years are making sense and how my love for people was not coincidence, how my compassion towards people, how my empathy towards people, how the kindness that I've displayed, not always, I haven't always been kind, I haven't always, I had seasons in my life where, like, you know when you're told that you must be a savage now, Mr. go be a savage, I'd say savage things to people, then cry, or like do something that was just out of character, and I'd be like, yo, Mudibu, why did I do that? But it's that thing of like wanting to own your femininity or own, you know, your power, reclaim your power. And it's like your power is in your meekness. It's in being humble. It's in your kindness. That's where your power is. That's what people actually remember. They don't remember. No one cares about the mean girl.
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know if you needed to hear that, but the mean girl leaves nothing meaningful.
Mm.
Yes, the word mean is in meaningful, but I mean, people oftentimes remember you for, people remember you for how you made them feel.
Mm.
And if you made them feel irrelevant, if you were condescending towards them, and if you had a superiority complex, they're going to remember you for that.
Yeah.
And is that really the legacy you want to leave behind?
Mm.
I don't know.
Mm. That's so true. And I think just talking about knowing yourself, how did you discover your true self and become more secure in your identity?
I'm still discovering my true self.
Yeah.
But it came from not clubbing anymore. I stopped clubbing. I stopped the turn up. No, it came from stillness.
Mm.
I think one of the biggest things you could afford yourself is stillness, because in a world where we're inundated with so much information, we have information coming from everywhere, from people, from our phones, from screen, from media, from all kinds of things.
Mm.
So how on earth are you supposed to find or discover the aspects of how you're best serving, or how you're supposed to live in your purpose, or who on earth you are? How are you supposed to find these things? You're not even reading the word. You're not going to know these things. Mm. It's like what I said. They're going to say, you must slay. They're going to say, you must be a boss. You must be a boss. B-I-T-C-H, you must be all of these things. You must assert yourself in this way, and you must carry yourself in this way in order to get respect from people. And stillness became the one of the best tools. Being able to sit with myself, being able to sit with my flaws and acknowledge them for what they are.
Mm.
Going to therapy was really good, because working through the brokenness was also something really, really powerful that we tend to overlook and isn't really rated as high. But therapy also helped me comb through different lies that I would tell myself and lies from the world that I imposed upon myself. So that certainly helped. Discovering or finding the facets of the woman that I'm becoming is also just, it's work. It's consistent work. Like it's happening every day. Every single day I'm doing the work. But also finding myself in a community of people who are going through the same experiences.
Yeah.
in a way where I don't compare myself. I don't go, oh, this person's achieved more. And now I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I have this imposter syndrome, or, you know, I start to feel like I lack in all of these ways. But a community of people also just pray and go, hey, this is who we are in Christ.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's it. And my true self. Whoa.
And how, I think in the midst of you finding your true self, or even the discovery of your true self, how have you found security in your identity? Because I think that's another major thing, especially being in the space you're in, you know, how do you find security in your identity?
I've made a lot of mistakes that have, you know, it's that kind of thing. If you fail five times, you've just found five ways not to do it. And I believe I've found, or I ventured on all of these avenues of finding validation, seeking validation through relationship, through my work, through accolades, and it was just never satisfying. Like, it's that insatiable desire to be liked by people, to be palatable, to be funny enough, to be quirky enough, but to be serious, to be smart enough, to be all of these things, and to model all of these principles or expectations and perceptions that people have of me. There's so much to be said about thine true self. What was your question again?
I think you've answered that, you know, and I think it's always like, even in whatever space you're in, you know, having that security in your identity is so important, because you don't go with the wind. Because
you can't,
you know, because if someone is doing something, saying something that's really out of character or out of what you believe or understand, you know, to stay true to what you know, what is right, not even what's right, what you believe. And even when you're in different spaces, because you always would look at some people and you'd be like, I didn't even know you were this kind of person because of maybe the perception you've given out. And I think that's something that we always learning. But I'm really interested to, you know, find out more around how did you balance your identity and ambition again in this industry? How do you find that balance or work through that balance? And I think it's the same. It's a
question. Thank you for saying working through, because I still am.
Just working through that balance. And I think it's not even unique to the entertainment industry because of what it's associated with. Because I think it's the same with corporate. How do you not become that horrible, toxic leader, you know, and be someone who's different. And so it's not even limited to that. And remembering who does God say you are in this space? Who does God say you're meant to be in this space? How do you find that balance?
Set hard boundaries. Set hard boundaries for yourself. And have an ethos, a manifesto. You can call it your value systems, your morals, that are just things that you simply cannot compromise. Because once everything is gray, anything goes. It's like that saying, if you don't stand for anything, you'll fall for everything. You must have something that you stand for. If the thing you stand for is authenticity, then in any situation that they say, listen, we love that this is your look, but we think that you should maybe just go in this direction. Then you say, well, according to the pillars of the things that I believe in, authenticity is right there. So, no, I'm not going to do that. There is that level of being able to meet people halfway. But if you're compromising on something that you define for yourself is a hard no, then it's a hard no. And in all situations, it must remain a hard no. Because then it becomes 5%. Okay, 5%, okay, maybe I'll lean in. And then it's 10%. And you wake up one morning and you're 100% of the person you never expected yourself to be.
Yeah.
You go, okay, maybe a little bit of dishonesty. And people don't see it like that.
Yeah.
Because now it's accepting this deal here, and it's a small, like tiny deal, or inflating your prices a little bit here, and then it becomes a habit. And habits become character. Once you do something enough, it becomes part of your character.
Yeah.
And that's something very difficult to work your way out of. So I think working on your character also is a very important thing to do. And you have to do that on a regular basis. If you don't do it, God will do it for you.
Yeah.
I promise you, if you do not work your own salvation or work or define your own character, circumstances will choose for you.
Sure.
Circumstances will help you define them for you, unfortunately. Yeah. Because now you have to find yourself in a place where, okay, do I choose family or work?
Mm.
Or do I choose money or values?
Yeah.
You will find yourself there. Yeah. If you don't have something that you can reference, even journaling. Journaling is so good because it helps you validate your experiences on a regular basis. Like, if you experience something at work, you go, I felt really overlooked by this person because such and such a thing happened. And once you start to validate those things for yourself, once you start to acknowledge the complexities of the person that you are, and you pray about these things or you work through these things, you start to see your character, you start to see the flaws that you may have not necessarily identified previously, and then you work your way through these things. Being honest with yourself also, saying, I procrastinate a lot. Mm-hmm. I should stop that. Or I actually don't give myself the credit I deserve. Or I find too much validation in people's appreciation of me.
Yeah.
Or I seek so much from, I care too much about people's thoughts about me and people's perception of me. And getting to that place, also working through those honesties, will also help in creating a discipline in you and clarity about your character.
Sure. I love that. Getting clarity about your character is very important in how you navigate around just balancing ambition and identity in the midst of that, because it's not always easy. And I'm not saying you shouldn't be running after things you want, but like always remaining true to the core of who you are and what you've been called to do in that moment is very important. I think maybe looking back at some hurdles that you've experienced, what are some of those hurdles you've experienced, and how did you persist throughout those hurdles, and how did you find purpose? I would say, I wouldn't say in pain, but in that season.
I would say contextually, the most relevant season has maybe been this year. As I mentioned, you know, I've been auditioning for a lot of work, callback after callback, or just feeling like there's a lot of resistance in that space. And naturally, because I defined myself for many years as an actress first, and I found my validation in the work that I was doing. Am I doing that series? Am I doing that soapy? Am I going to be on that commercial? And coming to a place where it felt like there was an abrupt halt. But lo and behold, as a presenter, I'm booking work. As a presenter, I'm working consistently. But as far as actively being Dumela Candace Mudisela, the actress, the thespian, the trained performer, I was not seeing the fruits in that space. And naturally you get to a place where it's like, God, if you gave me a passion for this and a love for this and you planted this desire for the art in my heart, why would I feel this level of resistance right now? And I would say, even if you think biblically, you know, there were those figures who were just there to usher in the Messiah, or there to usher in the word, or usher in a message, usher in his glory, or usher in a moment for others to bear witnesses of his glory. And it was so pertinent for me to get to a place where I recognized that I was worshiping the gift and not the giver.
That's so good.
And perhaps my role in this season now is to usher in the next generation of performers through my work, through my teaching, through my mentorship, through shows like The 5-Minute Call. And once I started to humble myself once again to the gift, I'm starting to see how it's starting to serve me again. And it's not necessarily through the most conventional way of being that leading actress on that show, but being the teacher. It is through using the tools that God has taught me and the tools that I've learned in school, you know, those very bold or exciting, like energizer, you know, warm-ups and stuff, I use in like my workshops now. And it's really bringing all of those tools together in order to fulfill a higher purpose. And I could have easily been resentful towards God, or I could have easily felt like a failure, or allowed the world to really drown me in the sadness of feeling unaccomplished. But I have so many accolades and achievements that far supersede any show that I could do. And it's not to take away what it means for me to still be an actress. Yeah. I'll still always have a love for that. But
in this season,
with that, with the lives that I change, with the people that I get to inspire through whatever it is that I do, really, I'm content in where I am.
Sure.
And I'm not saying I'm content without ambition, because I'm still very ambitious.
Yeah.
But my heart is changed towards what I do, where it's not about me. What am I learning? Everyone clap for me. Here I am on this red carpet. And now it's about, hi, Mudimu, whatever I can do to glorify you, then I'll do it.
Sure.
Because for a long time, I was doing things for my glory.
Mm.
One of my biggest dreams, and I used to meditate and mull over this for a long time. And all I wanted to do was drive down the highway and see my face on a billboard. And, you know, you see it with a lot of these shows that pop up on these streaming platforms that, you know, the leads.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah. And I grew very hurt. I developed quite a deep hurt about that. Not a jealousy. I wasn't coveting what everyone else was achieving. And I don't think I was jealous. I don't. But in hindsight, I felt a sadness, feeling like I wasn't achieving anything or doing anything meaningful, or clearly I'm not great enough as a performer. If I can't, you can't even give me a billboard on William Nicol. Come on.
Yeah.
And it's like, for all the years that I've worked and the seeds that I've sown over the years in diligence and commitment to the craft, and I'm asking you for one thing, Lord. I'm asking you for one thing. But he knew if he gave it to me, I would worship the billboard and not
him. Yes.
I would glorify myself and not him.
Mm.
So that's like humbling. You have to get to a moment where you recognize how you've been an enemy of your own progress or that's ways so good. In which you have made the things God gave you an idol. And now you're starting to idolize those things.
Mm.
I even started idolizing the perception of Candace Mudisele. This concept of being the brand, I recognize it as far as the work is concerned and the business is concerned. But when you start to idolize a version of yourself because this is the person that, or the product that people are consuming, and you put this person on a pedestal, you go, oh, Candace Mudisele can't be seen doing certain things like that. Candace Mudisele can't be seen at certain places. Oh, no, I've worked so hard. How could Candace Mudisele? No, you serve consistently at whatever level that you're at. Even when you're number one on the call sheet.
Yeah.
And that's what I've learned in the past 6 months. These are all of the important tools that I needed to learn that had to humble me. Mm-hmm. I had to humble myself. The season just really needed me to humble myself. That wherever I'm at and wherever God wishes to take me, next week I could be doing something at HBO. But if he gave me everything that I wanted when I wanted it, I probably would have squandered that HBO opportunity. I could have been a diva about it, and it's not innate in my character.
Yeah.
But when you've cultivated these things in your secret place, that I want this, I, those eyes start to show up on set, and you don't see it as such. But now it's like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't eat this. No. And people would be like, when was she this kind of person? But because quietly, these little intrusive thoughts have been creating a character, then they start to show up. And then you glorified yourself and not God. And that's such a missed opportunity.
Sure. I love that. And I think with just hearing what you've shared, what is the greatest gift you've received from failure? Like, or rejection. Not even failure. Rejection. One word.
Greatest gift. Redirection. Redirection.
That's true. That's good.
Is it rejection is redirection?
Yeah.
So every single time?
Yeah. When God closes that, for me, it's always been when God closes a door, something else opens up and it's so much better. And I'm always like, I could have never imagined this life for myself. And I'm always like, if I had been stuck there, that would have been my life, which would have been, I would have lived such a mediocre life.
And
I would have been so in such
a mediocre. And content in mediocrity.
Yeah.
Because at least you achieve the bare minimum.
Yeah.
It's like they say, you when you plan your life, you plan a house, but God has an estate in mind. Like, you're like, oh, what do you, if you can just give me this, if I could just work here, if I could just date this kind of person, and then you don't get it, and then you're resentful. But if you just waited patiently, you would see that, boy, oh boy, the things he has for us, for all of us.
Yeah, sure. I love that. So maybe in closing, and I think you've already spoken about this, I'm going to move into another question, because I really feel like even if without you saying this, everyone will arrive at this conclusion, because I was going to ask about your life message for the what God has given you.
Wait.
Must I go into that one?
No, it's fine. Go on to whatever you feel.
So I think maybe just to wrap up today's episode, are there any specific areas where you wish you had shown yourself more grace and understanding?
Damn, that question. Ooh. It would probably be two areas. It would be the space of my career. As I mentioned, as an actress, I started to truly feel like I hadn't achieved anything meaningful. And it was a very difficult place for me to be in. I think part of me still has that, but I'm aware that I still have a very long life. I could get my breakthrough role at the age of 40. But I just have to serve diligently now. So it would be that area firstly. And maybe also in relationship, you tend to reflect on relationships that didn't necessarily work out well and feel as though, not that you could have done more. I don't think I could have done more in any of my relationships, but I have found myself in moments where I've criticized myself because of the choices that I made in choosing a particular kind of partner. And it's that I can fix him complex.
Like, yeah.
I can fix him. No, you're trying to minister your partner. Leave him alone. Let the Lord fix him.
Yeah.
Let him do it. Let him lead himself and fix his own salvation. So maybe that's also the places where, you know, you kind of cry yourself to sleep in that little pillow. In like a lot of sadness, and I definitely could have shown myself more grace when it came to the moments where I recognized that it actually wasn't working out. No matter how much in my human effort I could try, if it wasn't meant to be, it truly wasn't.
Yeah, sure. What's one thing you know for sure about your journey yourself?
One thing I know for sure is that God is using me to rewrite the narrative for what it means to be young, what it means to be successful, what it means to serve, and what it means to live in his full glory. I think young people are really struggling with establishing their true identity. And I know with certainty that in whatever way I serve, that youth culture is being transformed one day at a time. No main, it's happening. And it has to happen, and I have to be obedient to that so that it can happen in my time.
Yeah.
In my time.
Sure. Thank you so much for joining us today. I think it's just hearing your journey from when you were like this 8-year-old and what you actually wanted to do and then what you're doing now. And I think just seeing how God has just used your journey full circle and how everything has come together.
You've actually highlighted that for me. I've seen it in bits and pieces, but this conversation had a great way of putting it all together, like every single aspect, from the reading of the dictionaries to the this, to the that, and all of those things, and how it's brought everything back together, and it's perfect timing.
Yeah, and I think it's just amazing to even witness that on the other side. And I think as the Equip and Elevate family, we would like to thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing your journey. Thank you for your boldness, your bubbleness, if that's been a word.
I'll take it.
And just being vulnerable. We don't take it lightly. We know that opening your heart is not always an easy thing. So we've got a small gift for you just to say thank you.
Oh my gosh, I love flowers.
Thank you so much.
Oh, guys. Hi. They're gorgeous. Oh. Oh, I got flowers. Thank you. This is so thoughtful. I really appreciate the gesture.
Thank you. I think this is like something very small now, and just to thank you for your time and thank you for your journey and your story. Continue being bold, and we cannot wait to see you. In it, what is it? EGOG. EGOT. She's studying drama too.
Oh my god, girl! What? Someone said EGOT. Yes, someone was like, "Candice, you're gonna be an EGOT recipient." I was like, "Me? I can't sing, but I can write a song." I mean,
Viola can't sing. Can she sing?
That's I'm like, I could write a song.
Your voice artist.
Yes, I did a Disney animation. Yes. Yeah,
like she got a Grammy for reading something there. Because Barack Obama has a Grammy. We've just established
it. Well, there we go. I receive it in the mighty name of Jesus. Amen and amen. Period. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we really appreciate it. And I hope everyone was as blessed as we were by this episode. And hope you guys stay blessed and have an incredible Equip and Elevate further on. Equip and Elevated.
As we wrap up, remember that getting started OctaFX is a breeze. Here's your roadmap. Download the OctaFX trading app, register and access educational materials, practice on a demo account, or dive into the real deal when you're ready. OctaFX is a licensed and regulated broker in South Africa, ensuring your peace of mind as you diversify your income stream with confidence.
I hope you were equipped and elevated by today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you loved what you heard, please share with others and post about on social media. Remember to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow me on Instagram, Ayanda_Vanna, and on Twitter, Ayanda Vanna. See you in the next episode.